Welcome to another episode of Philly Prime. I'm Dave Schrattweiser. I'm joined again today by former Deputy Police Commissioner Joe Sullivan, 38 years on the Philadelphia Police Department, from patrol all the way to the third floor at police headquarters. Joe, thanks for coming back. We have some other topics we're going to talk about. We had a great first show. I'm looking forward to a great second show. Thanks for joining me again.
My pleasure.
All right. It's good to have you. Good to see you again. I want to talk about an interesting maneuver by the mayor earlier this week to drop all of the, I guess, tickets and violations against all of the protesters involved in the post-George Floyd incident protests in Philadelphia. Your thoughts about that and what impact that might have on police officers and their morale?
Well, obviously, it's had a negative impact on morale. You know, that was always a bit of a controversial program. I mean, I always thought it was a good one. The purpose of the utilizing the CVN, and one of the reasons that we got such positive feedback during the DNC was, you know, you have protesters that are peaceful, even though maybe disruptive, and they're doing something disruptive. They're doing something illegal, like blocking the entrance to the DNC. But no one wants to criminalize them. No one wants to give them a criminal record. But I still have to. I have to rectify the situation.
You have to do something.
I have to do something. Right. So the CVN.
Tell people what that means.
A code violation notice.
Right.
It's a civil citation and not a criminal citation.
So a teenager who was involved in a protest that may have gone awry situation or acted improperly doesn't get a criminal record from that, but he still has to show up in court and face a judge, pay a fine, maybe get a little bit of a punishment, right?
Go to a small fine.
Yeah. So it's meant not to give people criminal records.
Right. And during the DNC, I mean, we would peacefully arrest people, load them on a bus, take them to a processing center. They would get a CVN. They would get a bottle of water and a tasty cake or a soft pretzel at the door.
Yeah.
And then they would return to the protest. And I can't even begin to tell you how many people walk up to me and complimented me on how, you know, efficient the system was.
You had it down to a science.
Yeah. And again, I think that may have been part of the problem here. You know, again, that's another part of, you know, we talked about it in the last show, the planning, you know, that there was an incredible amount of time spent planning. It was overseen by major crimes detectives to make sure that we had a very efficient system. So people came right off the bus, right in, run them, make sure they're not wanted. You know, one of the things we talked about, the ACLU helped us during the DNC a great deal in that they put out a lot of information to potential protesters on this is what you can do. And this is what you, if you do this, you can expect to be arrested and be prepared to be, if you're going to do this, be prepared to be arrested by having identification on you because that will expedite.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that you're not required to carry identification. No. It was a recommendation that in order to expedite,
you'll be
release.
In and out faster. Right.
And, yeah, and I mean, we got great planning for the DNC. I got to tell you, the ACLU was a huge asset. They helped us negotiate. We had one potential lawsuit before it began, or I should say, legal challenge to a permit, and they helped us negotiate an answer. You know, that made both sides happy, and it was just a matter of adjusting times and meeting places. So,
but flip this around for me. I mean, if you drop all those CVNs and you make them all go away, doesn't that make the average police officer on the street say, why was I there? Why did I do my job that day if we're just going to throw it out? Why did we spend millions of dollars on overtime that weekend if we were just going to let them go?
Yeah, and I don't know the complete breakdown of how many of them were regarding curfew.
I don't know that.
You know, that's a difficult situation. You know, one of the things I was really happy to see was that during the COVID-19, the Philadelphia Police Department, unlike other cities, did not try to get involved in enforcing the restrictions because nobody exactly knows what the real powers of the governor or the mayor, it seems to me, in issuing these. And we didn't have our officers out there fighting with members of the community and just exasperating police community relations situations, bad police community relations that already exist. Yeah. So I thought that was the. But now we have a situation where we're enforcing a curfew that. again, I mean, I don't know how many people were. You still got people going to coming back and forth to work, and you know, essential personnel.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that factored into it, but the actual you know officers that made arrest for violations of the law, and now and the violations were treated as civil. With civil citations, as opposed to giving people criminal records, and now they're not even responsible to. Wow. It's almost indicating that the officers were wrong in their actions, and I know that the one thing that
Has to hurt morale.
It hurts morale terribly because look, we talked about in the last show how just what a horrific thing was done to Mr. Floyd. No excuses. There's no explanation. There's no need to know what happened before. It doesn't matter. Inexcusable. Glad that officer is under arrest and no longer a police officer.
Right.
But you got officers here in Philadelphia, 1,500 miles away. They have nothing to do with it. The verbal abuse, the physical abuse.
Oh, yeah.
We had an officer run over. We had officers, his teeth knocked out. Across the country, you've had 18 officers killed since Mr. Floyd's death.
We had an incident on the Brooklyn Bridge in New York 2 days ago where high-ranking officers who were on scene while there was a protest going on the walkway over the Brooklyn Bridge, and officers tried to make some arrests of some people who were violating whatever tenets they had for doing that protest. And a guy with either a large stick or a pole was hitting police officers on the head, injured a number of officers, even high-ranking officers. I believe Chief Moynihan got hit in the head. So, I mean, we seem to be seeing now almost it's okay to hit back. It's almost okay to fight back. If an officer goes to try and place you under arrest, and I believe, from talking to cops I know on the street, that's very troubling to them.
Listen, this all started last summer with the water dumping on police.
Yeah.
The disrespect and the absolutely, ignoring the rights of police officers to be safe. And we have, unfortunately, politicians in this country who are in positions of power in some of our major cities, and they're just making an unbelievable decisions, saying unbelievable things in response to this, and even the response of the mayor of New York to that incident was woefully inadequate. He all he wanted to do was talk about defunding of the police. You want reform. You want police departments to do better. What's not being talked about is all the progress that has been done.
Well, let me talk to you about that because I was going there next. If I'm not incorrect here, Philadelphia is the first large city in the country to pass collaborative review, to be reviewed and accredited by an outside agency and then reaccredited. The number of police shootings are down significantly in Philadelphia. And if I understand correctly, the number of pedestrian stops by police are down significantly. And we've been under review by the Justice Department. Am I correct about all those things?
Yes, we've been under review by the Justice Department. And
we have accomplished all those goals.
And we have.
So what's the reform of the police department about then?
And we've been following the code.
We can do a better job. There's no doubt about that. The police department can do a better job.
Sure.
You wouldn't dispute that, right?
Sure.
Better training, right? Maybe
better
some
equipment.
Retraining, better equipment, more manpower maybe. Maybe not now. Defund the police. But I guess you kind of understand what I'm talking about here. There have been some significant goals met by the police department.
In 2 years in a row, we had the largest drop in fatal police shootings of the 10 largest cities in America. I think last year it was 7. And of course, our goal is to get to 0, but we're also a city that is experiencing an incredible amount of violence in the last couple of years.
I'm going to talk about that too next.
We lack intelligence software. We lack a lot of, what in other cities is, look at New York City and look at the camera systems they have.
Sure.
The shot spotters, the amount of shot spotters they have, the strength of their ALPR.
You can't walk anywhere
system.
In New York without being on a camera somewhere.
It's just every cop in New York
ACLU
has an iPhone.
ACLU doesn't like that. But
every cop has an iPhone too, and we're way behind in that regard, and we are not at our authorized strength. And the people that want to defund the police that, truly truly defund and abolish the police. They're not people that are living in these neighborhoods right now that are suffering from this violence. And look at the people that are that are dying every day in our city. There was a shooting in the 18th District yesterday. It was a play street, and there were officers at the other end of the block. I mean, there are the police department is committed to reform. We want bail reform. We don't want mass incarceration. We want to make sure that probation is dealt out fairly. We want sentencing reform. We want all of that. But there is a small percentage of people that are on the streets right now that are going to hurt other people, and there's nothing that you or I can do about it other than arrest them. And we've got to focus on that 1%, but we got to be open to other ideas, and we are. I don't know where Focus Deterrence is, where it's a program that we're supposed to be beginning in the city. I think we have to step that up. The idea of having credible messengers, of having, you know, violence, civilian violence interrupters, these are things that work. Yeah. And we need to work with them. So, but if you get into defunding the police, yeah. Well, you know, we're only at 40% of our department has body-worn cameras. Now, if you would take money out of the budget, that means the other 60%. And we talked about 676, and there were no body-worn cameras down there. So I really can't give you, you know, an analysis that right. that you might like me because have given you, because we, you know, we don't have that.
Yeah.
If we're gonna truly continue reform, you can't take $18 million out of the budget just to get started, and then think that we're going to be able to accomplish yeah. reform.
Let's talk. You talk about violence. Murders in Philadelphia, and these numbers are a little old, a couple days old, 221 this year. That's 45 more than last year, 26% increase. Shootings, 1,578, 55% jump in Philadelphia. Shooting victims, up 31%. Nobody is happy with that. Nobody. Huh. And I know people tend to think that police can stop homicides and stop shootings. Not really real-life thoughts, correct? You can't stop them. You can do things along with the community, churches, schools, things like that, to talk to folks about not getting to the stage where they use a handgun or a knife or some other kind of weapon. But police can't stop murders, last time I looked. So when you see those kind of numbers and things like that, what do you think we should be doing to stop this? And I'm sure there are some things that were in place when you were a deputy mm-hmm. that were working towards that end. But the numbers are still really high.
Well,
I mean, the first month of the year, I think we had 40 homicides in jail.
You know, I was part of the group that went up to John Jay College to meet with Dr. Kennedy. You know, the concepts of focused deterrence, they have been successful. They were very successful in Boston. They were successful in Oakland and many other cities. We need to step that process up and begin that process because, as I just said, you know, the idea of, you know, identifying those people most at risk to be the next shooter or the next victim and going in before they are either one
right.
and trying to offer them options as opposed other than incarceration, mm-hmm. but by also letting them know that if you fire a gun, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
But we don't want to see that happen, and we don't want to see you die. So tell us how we can help you not get to that stage of being yeah. either one.
Right.
I don't think we utilize nonprofits nearly enough. I mean, they've done great work in Los Angeles and New York. I mean, by going in and cleaning the street, building playgrounds,
sure.
After school programs, you know, giving options to the community. You can't put it all on the police. We're part of the answer, but our part of the answer. And I've been saying this for yeah. the entire time that I was the deputy commissioner of patrol, is that people that carry guns on the street illegally need to understand that if you get caught, and I'm not talking about 5 or 10 years, but you're going to go to jail, mm-hmm. and you're going to spend a couple of years in jail, especially if you're a convicted felon. It has to be a certainty. And when that's a certainty, you'll see the precipitous drop.
Right. Well, that's the federal partners, too. The U.S. Attorney in Philadelphia and the FBI have been working with you guys.
They need to take more cases, though.
To take more cases because they have a bigger punch.
You know,
5 years now. Again, we talked about incarceration, and that needs to get dealt with, too. Mass incarceration, big numbers like that. That has to get dealt with, too, on that end of it. But there is a more powerful federal sentence than the sentence that you can hand out in Philadelphia.
Yes, and we need them to take more cases than they've ever taken.
Because that message has to get across. If you carry a gun, you're a convicted felon, or even if you're not, and you commit a crime with a gun, you're looking at a five-year sentence usually in the federal system.
Well, listen, I mean, I people do forget they left the gun in the car. And
right,
they,
sure.
You know, first-time offenders should and that's why I know, Rich Ross was, hoping to get gun court back. Because that's one of the things that gun court did. You know, it looked and it said, okay, listen, you made a mistake. We're not putting you in jail. We're going to put you on probation. And at the end of your probation, if you've sinned no more, we wipe your record clean and you can move forward. Because that's what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, we bring people into the criminal justice system. Yeah. We put that tag of a criminal on them and that criminal record. And that impacts their ability to, get secure education and jobs. And so we don't want to do that. But the chronic offender, the person that's already had, all of his passes, and he still continues to break the law. He still continues to hurt people. That small percentage of people have to be dealt with in a very certain way. And the best example I can use is the city of New York.
Yeah.
Now that they've gotten reformed DAs, now that they've passed this horrible Bail Reform Act, that they've taken that away from the city of New York. Now people are no longer afraid to carry an illegal gun in New York City. And look at what's happening with gun violence in New York City. In 1 month, it was up over 200%.
Yeah, especially of late. We've had a little bit of that. There's been criticism of our DA, Mr. Krasner, about low bail on some of these cases and letting people out. I believe there was a list circulating early this year of over 20 individuals who've been repeatedly released on gun charges in the city. And by the way, if he ever wants to come on this show and respond to some of this, I'd be more than happy to help him. Have him on here and let him offer his comments along the same thing. Can we talk a little bit? Everybody, every once in a while when I'm on the street, always ask me, where's Joe Sullivan? and I talk about, you decided to leave the department back in January, and I kind of want to ask you, what was that all about, if you want to talk about it?
I'm not even sure myself. Yeah. I mean,
it kind of happened so quickly, nobody really understood the situation, and I kind of am interested in kind of what led up to that for you.
Yeah, I there's very little I can really say about that. I was, as I said that day, and as a deputy commissioner, you serve at the desire of the mayor. You're an at-will employee, and I was called over and told that Will was no longer there.
Yeah.
And I certainly wasn't going to revert back to my former rank as a chief inspector at this point in my career. And
you have 38 years on the department, correct?
Yeah.
You can retire and get a nice pension. I know you didn't want to go that way. You're still a young guy.
Yeah. It wasn't my choice.
Yeah.
But I'm not going at this stage in my life. I'm not going backward in my career.
Yeah.
So I just felt that, there was a feeling that maybe, my philosophy was not consistent with theirs.
Yeah.
It's
no secret you would have liked to have been a police commissioner in Philadelphia. Am I right about that?
Sure.
Yeah.
If you join the police department,
Well, is that not the goal of most? Some police officers want to be police officers or detectives.
Mm-hmm.
Some people want to be leaders.
Right.
Some people want to be the ultimate leader, the top person. And that's not a secret, correct?
No, I mean, I love the job.
There are a lot of people who would like to see you be the commissioner.
Well, I appreciate that.
It's the truth. I have people say that to me all the time.
But
somebody I talked to yesterday knew you were coming on the show and said that. So,
Again, that is the privilege of the mayor to make that decision, and I respect that.
Yeah.
I made it known that I was certainly willing to accept the position because I'm a lifelong resident of the city.
Yep.
And my father was a civilian in the police department, so I grew up around the police department.
You became a police officer because your dad took you to a swearing-in ceremony, am I right?
Yep. Yes.
You told your dad you wanted to be a police officer.
Yep. I love cops. As a deputy commissioner, you just realize that you wish the public could see what comes across your desk every day. The best part of my day would you read officers made some incredible arrest or used some incredible amount of restraint and did not use force and were able to effect an important arrest or to get a person in crisis to safety. The best part of my day was making that phone call.
Yeah. Well, I can remember days, and you do have the reputation of being a tough guy and about being a, you know, a forceful individual, but I can remember multiple times talking to you either out in the parking lot of police headquarters or over the phone or whatever, where you would say, you wouldn't believe what a couple of our cops did last night, the amount of pressure they were under that could have resulted in the use of deadly force, and they never even took their gun out, and they de-escalated the situation. I'm trying to think of one that was one that I remember you being particularly proud of, that two young officers who could have taken a lot of bad steps that day took a lot of good steps and not only subdued the suspect but got a weapon off the street and things like that. You would admit to me that that was some of your more proud moments as, well, as a leader.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, if you think that... If you think that you got to be a deputy commissioner because of because you're so great, you missed the point. They put you there.
Yeah.
You try to use your leadership to motivate people, to get people to, you know, do the best job possible. But I only enjoyed the career that I did because of the amazing people that worked under me and I got to work alongside of.
And you were in narcotics.
And trusted me. And yes.
At highway. At SWAT.
I wasn't in highway, but I oversaw highway.
Well, you oversaw
but
highway, yeah. But you know what highway is all about.
Absolutely.
The elite highway patrol, as it likes to be called.
Yes.
But, you know, that's what I'm saying. You have a gross amount of experience, really, across a lot of different areas, including patrol, which you were not an expert at, but were put in that position by Rich Ross and quickly became an expert.
But remember, I mean, I was a patrol officer, sergeant, lieutenant,
in charge
captain,
of all those police officers.
Yes,
kind of thing.
Yes. And you know, patrol is the backbone of the police department.
Right.
You know?
And it did round out your career a little bit. You would agree with me on that, right?
It was just a phenomenal experience, and I'll always be grateful to Commissioner Ross that he gave me that experience.
And I'm not looking for that, but I think it did round out your career. You did all the other things, and to be in charge of, I forget how many patrol officers there are now.
4,500.
So, there you go. That's a lot of cops, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of cops. Talk to me about kind of what you want to do next. What do you want to do next?
I'm still figuring that out. You know, with COVID has put everything on hold.
Yeah,
now,
I
Minneapolis.
That.
I mean, I'm certainly looking at other police departments, but you know, you got to consider a lot about moving and things like that.
Well, so family. Right?
I'm looking for the
my son. I know you're very proud of.
Oh yeah,
Joe
Jr. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he's an employee with the FBI, and he is also now a infantry officer with the National Guard.
Yeah.
So extremely proud of him and as well as my two daughters.
Yeah.
So I'm just, you know, looking for the right opportunity.
Right.
My wife's in the police department.
Right.
So,
Kelly.
You know, yes. And so I have two stepchildren as well to be considered, one in college and one in grade school. So there's a lot that, you know, has to be factored in and everyone has to be thought of. But, you know, certainly if I was offered the right opportunity to be a police chief, I would be glad to do it.
What's the most rewarding part about being a leader like that for you?
The most important part is definitely just, you know, like I was talking to my son last night about, you know, after the DNC was over, you know, it's just a great feeling that, you know, you when you first get into it, you're, you know, I don't normally show it, but, you know, inside I'm like,
I know.
Oh, man.
I know all about that.
I'm
I've seen
scared
that.
To death that this is going to go wrong. And,
I've seen that.
You know, but
That was a good sigh of relief and a good time, because a break after that, correct?
I remember the one protester, Dickie Werfel, I hope he hears this. He was the guy that hugged me on top of the camper outside the MSB before we took our first really big march that had the potential to go really wrong. And just by the crowd seeing his hug, you know, everything. And I think a lot of the cops have kind of understood my
why you were doing it. Yeah.
Why? Because it was because I wanted everybody.
Yeah.
I wanted my officers. I wanted protesters. I wanted my city. Everything to just
take a deep
go
breath.
Smoothly and you know, let protesters protest and keep cops safe and make the city, you know, shine. And
at the end of the day, that was always the goal. Right.
Yeah.
With these big protests at DNC, had you been in charge during the George Floyd protests, things like that. The ultimate goal is that, am I right?
You want to go home with, you know.
Protesters are happy they got to protest. Their voice could be heard. They did it safely. Your officers went home safely.
Yes.
Right? That's a successful day. handling a protest, right?
Absolutely.
All right, Joe, it's a great pleasure having you here today.
All right, man.
Thanks for coming in for a couple of weeks, and it was nice to hear from you again, and good to see you again. Thanks for doing it. I hope we get to do this again, hopefully, sometime.
My pleasure, anytime.
All right, thanks again. Folks, thanks for listening. This is Philly Prime for this week. I hope you come back and listen again, and we'll see you next time.